Hi, this is Shane Vanderhart. In the following interview, I had a chance to sit down with Christian Fong, a Republican candidate for governor, one of six running. He is currently a Cedar Rapids businessman. He serves on the Generation Iowa Commission. He also spearheaded, was CEO of Corridor Recovery, a flood recovery effort in Cedar Rapids. I hope you enjoy the interview.
Christian, thank you so much for taking time to meet with me to answer a few questions. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Good to be here in Des Moines.
Great. Well, hey, just let you start off and just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am an Iowan. I'm a rural Western Iowan by growing up from Underwood, Iowa, and now live in urban Eastern Iowa, and so kind of have covered the gamut of the Iowa experience, if you will. I grew up in a really poor family. Was on free and reduced lunch programs when I was a kid. I'm sure I can't be too many governor candidates that were on welfare as a kid. But, you know, now in business and have really gotten to experience the best of what Iowa is and see what Iowa's heart is about, what makes us work as a state where a kid can come from a big family in a rural area in poverty. And, you know, I'm sitting here wearing pinstripes today, and it's just, you know, hey, this is Iowa. It's the Iowa dream at work.
Great. So what led to your decision to run for governor?
You know, when my wife, Janelle, and I sat down, and this was after having done about 6 to 8 months of flood recovery work, because I not only am a business person in Cedar Rapids, but I was the CEO of Corridor Recovery and was managing from the grassroots side the flood recovery in Cedar Rapids, which went very well. When we started flood recovery, you know, I've got a business, I've got 3 kids, young kids, it's a busy time of life. And yet we said, this may be the single most important event that we ever lived through. We're just private citizens trying to do the best we can to help our community. Mm-hmm. We will not look back and say we could have done anything else. Okay. And so we threw ourselves into flood recovery. When that started to tail off, I said, you know, we had the conversation. We said, this is what we're made for. We are made for public service. Mm-hmm. We are made to do it all out. Everything you can throw at the problem. You know, it is a, with all your heart, soul, and mind, if you will, to use a biblical reference. And when we looked at the problems around us and said, the ones that we're passionate about, that we see the solutions to, and we can deliver solutions, they're the state-level problems that the governor needs to tackle. And so with the same energy that we threw ourselves into flood recovery, I threw myself into a campaign for governor.
Okay, because I know it took a lot of people. Well, some people thought, okay, maybe. I know your name was tossed around a little bit in the blogosphere. I saw him. And then I remember reading, you know, Crusty Conservative. I don't know if you read some of his stuff on Iowa Republican, but said, man, why not run for, like, treasurer?
Crusty is not just good. He's just good enough, I think, is the little seal. So the question is, why governor?
Yeah, I think you answered that.
Yeah.
As far as you want to, obviously, treasurer can't address flood recovery.
And the treasurer can't determine... It can't determine tax policies.
Absolutely.
The treasurer can't hold spending in check.
Sure.
Treasurer can't keep that Iowa dream alive.
Okay.
I mean, all due respect to the treasurer.
Yeah. No,
you know,
our
candidates obviously have a passion for, you know, figuring out how to do bond financing and stuff like that. Important, but it's not what drives me.
Okay.
What drives me is deeper and broader.
How do you get involved in the flood recovery effort? I mean, from what I understand, it was already starting to happen, but then Corridor Recovery, did you bring a coalition together? I mean, were there other organizations?
Boy, I was there right from the beginning. The day the flood peaked, June 13th, 2008, mm-hmm. The organization internally was a church coalition called Serve the City.
Okay.
And Serve the City, one of the board members was my senior pastor. And so when I woke up that morning and, you know, the city was already under severe stress, Aegon had announced that all campuses closed. I mean, the whole city was closed. And so my first thing to do was to call down to to my pastor, who's also a close friend, and just say, how can I help? Okay. And he said, get down here to the emergency operations center, because he was at the hub of managing all the volunteers for the entire county.
Okay.
Steve Irwin is an excellent manager of a church.
But it was not necessarily his skill set.
Okay. And I had worked for a time at McKinsey, the consulting firm. I was a business executive, and yet I had all the relationships through the private, through the public sector.
Okay.
So I was already sort of that bridge between public and private. That was part of my role in Cedar Rapids. And this was the natural evolution of it, to be called down, help put in place a system for managing these volunteers. By the end of that day, it was a conversation between the city manager, the head of United Way, and myself. Right? So you have public, you have social, and you've social sector, and you've got business sector saying, what's going on?
Okay.
Let's take stock. We just survived. Water's starting to go down. What do we need? And out of that, it took me about 2 hours to write the business plan that became Corridor Recovery. That was the successful model that's been duplicated in after Hurricane Rita, Brownsville. The one right next to Houston, closer to the Gulf.
Okay.
This has been replicated in other communities now. MIT cited it as a best practice. And it was all just born out of the relationships of people that knew each other and trusted each other in the midst of disaster.
Okay, great. So, you know, obviously we're going to have a primary in June, and June 2010. And why should Iowa's Republicans nominate you over, you know, others that are running? I guess there's six, right?
There's six candidates. There is, well, for starters, my experience is very different from the other candidates. It is pure private sector, and it is the sort of experience of solving real problems, being accountable to create those solutions, to see further ahead than the people around you. That's the sort of experience that I think we need more of in state government. If people like our political process, if people like what steeping in politics turns people into, I'm not going to be their best candidate. I'm just not.
Okay.
I will be the sort of person that transforms the way state government works, that bucks the common political wisdom in order to get it done, and doesn't lose sight that I'm a private citizen that happens to be serving his state in a public office. So that's the first thing. The second thing is just looking further into the future and saying, where's the state going over the next 10, 20 years? Mm-hmm. We can look backwards. Mm-hmm. We can celebrate what we've done, and we can honor what we've done. But when it comes to looking forward, the Republican Party needs to find somebody that can lead for the next decade or more, and produce the sort of leadership that will return Iowa to the prominence that we should have on the national stage.
So, if I'm hearing you correctly, if you were to win nomination election, we're looking at, you know, maybe not just one, two terms, but possibly even three.
I will serve as long as it takes to return Iowa to national prominence, and as long as Iowa will have me. I mean, let's be honest. There are some elections in between that I have to prove that I've done a good job.
Sure,
I will give my life for this state, and that's the reality. And if all they ask of me is 4 or 8 years, I think in the Republican ethic should be, because we believe so strongly in the freedom of the individual and the liberty within the families and the communities, it should only be with reluctance that any of us step up and assume a position of power and authority over other individuals. It's with reluctance that I set aside the private sector, which has been so good to me, but it's out of a sense of obligation and duty that I will serve for as long as I can do good for this state and its people.
Okay. I'm sure you noticed the latest Iowa poll that came out on Sunday. In the head-to-head matchup, Culver's 42%, you're 34%. But one thing I noticed was that 84% are unsure about you. How are you going to overcome that?
You know what? The poll was actually really positive for me to have such low name ID, mm-hmm. and to have such, you know, when you look at the positive to negative ratio, and you start to say, of the people that know me, how many of them are impressed? How many aren't? And that's, at this point in a campaign, that's really what you're looking for.
Yes.
Because every touch point results in someone making a decision. Do I like this person or not? Mm-hmm. And my positive to negative ratio is extremely strong. And that means that the people that hear me mm-hmm. are buying into the vision, buying into the message that I'm saying. So it was very positive.
Yeah.
You know, and being behind Culver right now, hey, that's just a name ID.
No,
issue.
I
not a big deal.
And I personally, I don't see that as, I think, yeah, I agree with you that early on, this, I mean, Culver's in trouble. that there's no good news in the Iowa poll.
You know, the funny thing is that if only 16% of Iowans feel like they know enough about me to have an opinion, and yet 34% are committed to vote for me, that's how dissatisfied they are. It's the anything but Culver, the ABCs of politics, anything but Culver at play right now.
Okay. So you win nomination, you win election. What would your top agenda be in the Fong administration?
You know, I step back and I think about what government should be about. Government should reflect the values of the people it serves. That's government by the people. We don't have that in Iowa, and we have to get back to being able to look at our state government and trusting that it's filled with people that will treat us with the honor and respect that every Iowan deserves, and will faithfully reflect the values that Iowans share. Now, what does that mean? Look, you run around the state, and it means different things to different regions, mm-hmm. to different demographics. To some people, the fact that state government is on the wrong side on the issue of marriage is extremely important. And I would agree that this is a place where government is not reflecting the will of the people. In this case, not even asking what the will of the people is by giving them the opportunity to vote on a constitutional amendment of marriage. On the budget issue, Iowa families don't get to run endless deficits. Our businesses don't run endless deficits. To have a government that refuses to balance its books, refuses to be fiscally responsible, refuses to even obey its own laws with the 99% spending limitation law, have two sets of books as if you don't trust the people to even understand what you're doing, or you don't want them to know what you're doing. That's not government that reflects the will of the people either. And so I see whether it's the marriage issue or the fiscal issue or having a government that supports growth in all 99 of our counties instead of just the 14 counties that have grown since 1980. It's all, those are just symptoms of a government that's just out of touch.
Sure. So do I send, there would be like a Fong listening tour going around Iowa?
My first year would be called the Year of the Iowa Family.
Okay.
And I would go to all 99 counties. Because on the Republican side, look, we're all, at least five of six of us are for traditional marriage. I'm not sure about, I'm not sure where he stands yet. But we'd all love to know if he, you know, if he's with his lieutenant governor or where he's at. But the, it's important that the Republican Party not just get traditional marriage back, because I do believe it's the core, the bedrock of Iowa's families and our communities. But we've got to have a really positive message of saying we're going to celebrate what makes families strong. Mm-hmm. We're going to celebrate adoption and foster parenting and people that have small businesses with, you know, multi-generational, mm-hmm. people taking elderly parents. And it's important that that we listen to Iowans and celebrate what they're doing right. That's an important role of government.
Okay. Listening to Iowans and people, you know, listening to Culver and the 10% across-the-board budget cut that he ordered, mm-hmm. I was thinking, I can't do that to my family budget, just across-the-board 10% cut. How would you handle spending cuts?
Well, I would not ask my 2-year-old to drink 10% less milk. I would not ask my 5-year-old to do 10% less of his homework.
Sure.
I would not ask.
No, I'm sure he would be right there with it.
I would not ask my 7-year-old to chop 10% off the bottom of his pants, let alone the top of his pants. Well, that's what just happened, right?
Sure.
By cutting the top 10% off of every budget, we just cut off all the belt loops and our pants are falling down mm-hmm. as a state. It was a lazy way to do it. other people have said that too. You know, I've got a unique perspective as a business executive, mm-hmm. having had to go through some severe cost cutting and belt tightening measures over the last 2 years. And it's not easy to do. I'm going to just put it out there. It is a very, very difficult thing to do, and to suggest that it's easy to cut the size of government belies the fact that political realities and management realities mm-hmm. make it a very difficult chore for someone that doesn't know how to do a budget.
Sure.
And yet, this is the CEO of the state, and when you have a CEO that can't do CEO work, mm-hmm. you have a real problem.
Sure. Now, I'm a rubber, where the rubber meets the road type of guy.
Yeah.
I like specifics.
Mm-hmm.
Have you thought about where, if you, you know, because, I mean, if you were to win election, I mean, this is still going to be a problem. So,
hey, 10% wasn't enough, right? We're going to have to keep cutting. I've made a commitment that my first budget would be 5% less than Culver's last budget.
Okay.
And I don't even know if that's going to be enough when I start looking at how
probably
deep
not.
A hole he's leaving us in. So here's what we do. It's a three-part process, because the CEO is not always taking a little X-Acto knife and saying, I'm carving this, carving this, carving this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a micromanager.
Okay.
That's not my personality. Certainly, I look at programs and I question whether they should exist. Like the Iowa Film Office, the mm-hmm. whipping boy of the moment.
Sure.
Like, please, can we get rid of the Iowa Film Office? $200 million? How about you cut my income taxes by 10% instead, which is the equivalent?
Mm-hmm.
The Iowa Values Fund, $50 million that are typically, you know, so often going to fund out-of-state industries to, you know, put some low-wage jobs here. Really, why do we do that? And so you can go through and look at the specific programs, but as the CEO of a state, what I want to suggest is we have to do the following three things. One, hire directors of agencies and departments that are committed to delivering efficiencies within their own department that would cut the cost of their departments by 5% or more. Now, as governor, it would be my job to say, you know what, we're not going to do it there. You know, mm-hmm. thank you for your effort on that, but we're not going to accept that. We'll take it here. But every department head should have that as a baseline expectation that they're going to have to do it. Secondly, we should be looking for cost savings across the different agencies. To just cut agencies is not enough. You have to look at the functions that cross the different agencies. Things like IT. You know, famously, the Republicans said, look, if we just combine the back office mm-hmm. IT functions, we could save $20 million a year. Mm-hmm. Let's do it. $20 million a year. You know, negotiating with public employee unions are the sorts of things that happen across agencies.
Mm-hmm.
Someone that understands how to do tough negotiations is going to have to be in place. I've done billion-dollar deals with New York, Wall Street lawyers, Wall Street investment bankers. I know how to play a tough game. I know how negotiations can drive toward objectives that, while difficult, mm-hmm. are good outcomes. And finally, the concept of zero-based budgeting needs to be put in place. Now, some Republicans have suggested what we do is we sunset programs so that every few years they have to be reappropriated and mm-hmm. recreated. I would say that in our first year, we should at least go through every program that exists and say, do we need this, and are we getting our money's worth? And if the answer is no to either one, it should be cut mm-hmm. or repurposed. And by doing that, we can cut the size of government.
Great. You've said that you want to eliminate income tax. Like, yes. That is a taxpayer.
And if anybody doesn't want to cut their income tax, they can mail a check and we will happily cash it.
what I would like to know, is, you know, that right now, I believe, give or take, makes up about half of the funding of state government. How would you make up for that? Obviously, you're going to make some cuts, so you wouldn't make up entirely the whole amount. But how do you fund, for instance, like K-12 education without making sure property taxes aren't raised as a result?
Yeah, let's be clear. It's a phase out. My stance is that by the year 2020, we should be able to eliminate the state income tax. But you have to do it responsibly.
Okay.
You know, if you did it all, it's about $2 billion of personal income tax that comes in. You couldn't do that in 1 year. is going to take a number of years. Years of constant fiscal restraint, constantly looking at limiting the size of government or even shrinking the role in the size of government while preserving the basic services that the public depends on, things like education. It'll come by closing special interest loopholes, these narrow tax loopholes that allows some individuals and some companies to pay zero, whether it's through tax credits or quirks in the tax law that were usually set up because a lobbyist had access to the right legislator. We have to cut those things out. You cut out the loopholes, and you're just restoring an even playing field where everyone is paying their share of what they need to be paying, and so that no Iowan is being asked to bear the burden for a politically powerful neighbor. And then finally, our economy will grow. Our economy will grow. You cut, and that's the reason you cut taxes. You don't cut taxes just so that more people have to spend. You cut taxes because it will create jobs. It will add to new business formation. It will do it across Iowa instead of in only the certain select communities that get chosen by economic development experts now. And by seeing that business growth and your tax base growing, you actually see revenue increasing. And then over time, again, it'll take 10 years. It's not going to be an overnight process, but we'll get there.
In, you know, in the short term, obviously, I don't know if you've probably were paying attention, Virginia, New Jersey. I mean, the whole thing was jobs, jobs, jobs. Corzine lost because, I mean, he was handling the economy and jobs was horrendous. Obviously, you answered part of this, but what could you do as governor to help create private sector jobs? And I think our current governor's done much to create public sector jobs, and let's cut them.
I mean, let's be clear. What is the most efficient way to grow jobs? It's to allow it to happen in the private sector. If you have a public sector job that is temporary, almost by definition, only as long as the funding stream, how many public institutions or publicly funded institutions complain that if their funding gets cut off, they're going to have to lay people off? Essentially what they're saying is, unless you keep raising taxes, we don't get have jobs. Okay, they acknowledge it themselves that public sector jobs don't have the multiplier effect that private sector does. So what do? You push money into the private sector. You push the jobs themselves. How much of the duties done by the state government could be returned to the private sector? And the government is now contracting them out. That way a firm can be created in a town somewhere in Iowa that's also doing the same job in other states for the private sector. By returning those jobs to the private sector, by returning taxpayer dollars to the private sector through lower taxes, you unleash the power, especially of small and locally owned businesses, which create 75% of our jobs in Iowa anyway.
Okay. Kind of shifting gears here a little bit. You know, we've talked a little, or you talked a little bit about the same-sex marriage ruling that happened on April 3rd. How would you specifically address that as governor? I hear a variety of different opinions from Vanderplas saying, I'll do an executive order to Branstad, who knows.
Well, you know, the executive order, whether it is enforceable or workable, it certainly sets up a situation where the well, like at the federal level, you have the federal funding of abortion, which is an executive order decision. And every time you get a new governor, it just goes back and forth.
Sure.
I think this is too important an issue to leave to the vagaries of the political winds.
Okay.
Some people have suggested that that's actually good for the Republican Party because we can keep pulling this out cycle after cycle. I just think it's too important an issue.
Sure.
And someone that wants to play politics with it is really demeaning what marriage is. So what would I do?
I would
press for Iowans to get to have a vote.
Okay.
Defining marriage as the union between one man and one woman. I would personally support it. I would vote for it.
Okay.
And I would use the office of the governor to ensure that Iowans have that opportunity.
Okay, so kind of use a bully pulpit there.
And absolutely.
And as far as retention of judges, I know I heard Senator Bain, you know, know, talk about vote no on the retention. I heard Rod Roberts is going around doing that, as well as Vander Plaats. Do you support the for people to vote no on retention of Supreme Court judges when they come up in 2010?
I would encourage people to vote no on retention. I would also encourage people to get educated and not do it as a knee-jerk reaction, but sure. to make sure they know why they're voting no.
Okay. I know you mentioned in your speech almost a couple weeks ago here at the RPI event that you were the only candidate born after Roe v. Wade. How would you advance the pro-life agenda as governor?
You know, I don't even like to use the word agenda on it. This is my generation.
Okay.
And a third of them didn't get to take their first breath. And so I take it very personally that I have colleagues and friends that are just missing, let alone a tax base. You know, you wonder why your taxes are going up. Well, if a third of the taxpayers are not going to get to be here. This is something that, again, I share the commitment to life that I believe most Iowans share. Now, when you start breaking it down to what we can do and what we should do, I, as a governor, will defend life from conception to natural death. When it comes to the policies that you put in place, you take wins where you can get them. Right? With the laws the way they are and the court system the way that there is, you couldn't just outlaw all abortions.
Well, I mean,
we wouldn't do that. But you have to take wins where you can. Some of them that we should be pressing for are enforcing the parental notification laws. Kids, you know, if a kid is going to have an abortion, their parents had better know for the safety of the kid, because medical complications can happen.
Well, it's ridiculous.
So there are things like that.
Kids have to get permission to take aspirin at school, but yet they don't have
And yet they can go get an abortion. Look, I'm a parent of three kids, you know. I do not want my daughter to ever have an abortion. But if she did, I hope she tells me. Mm-hmm. And there are other issues that I think are common sense issues that are about the safety of the kids and the safety of the women, that all Iowans can agree, whether you're pro-life or pro-choice, keeping our kids safe and our women safe should be paramount. And so those are the sorts of pro-life wins that I think we can get right away, because they reflect the Iowa values we share.
Okay. What is your position on school choice, you know, parental rights and education? I'm a home educator myself, mm-hmm. So we value choice. I know a lot. I have friends that send their kids to private school. So, how would you champion that, or what's your position?
You know, the more parents can be involved in their kids' educations, the better the kids' education will be. Parents that are involved then will read to their kids. They take an interest. They ask the questions. They communicate that it's valuable. School choice is a great way to get parents involved in their kids' education, because parents know that they can't just step back and let the state run the education of the kids. The parents have to get involved. A great example is in Washington, D.C., when they started allowing parents opportunities to select different schools. Now, some parents went ahead and selected the school that the kid was already in, but the big win was you had parents all across Washington, D.C., that all of a sudden were involved and caring. Once they were involved in the school, now the school had volunteer support. Mm-hmm. The kids and the parents were connecting at home around school. So whether a kid is homeschooled, private schooled, or public school, they should have access to world-class education. And the concept of school choice is the right thing to do. It will result in better education for our kids. And let me just add, by the way, for too long, we have measured success in the state in the education area by how much money we spend. Mm-hmm. We start looking at per pupil spending, whether it's up or down. We start looking at financial metrics. Since when was education about the money? Mm-hmm. You will always get the results that you measure. It's one of the basic tenets of management. You get what you measure. We need to be measuring for high standards and measuring for students that can compete and achieve on the global scale. And when we start making that our objective, we will have schools that again return to number one in the nation.
Okay. Do you support tax credits or tax vouchers for private education?
You know, the system that we have in place now, where scholarships, both individuals and corporations can donate to private school scholarship funds to make sure that that kids have access to it, is a good first step. I'd love to see that expanded so that more and more kids have the opportunity to that pure choice of, do I go to a private school, regardless of their economic background. So expanding that would be a good first step. There's a lot of debate whether you should go vouchers or credits, mm-hmm. which one impose government interference. Mm-hmm. And there's just not a consensus. I've talked with a lot of homeschoolers, a lot of people choosing private school, mm-hmm. and I can just get different answers all over the map.
Well, I know what a personal note, something that really bothers me is that, you know, for instance, my wife and I can't take books and our education expenditures, you know, as a deduction.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do taxes, it's like, you know, probably no private school people can, you know, their tuition and there's some of their expenses. So it's like, that doesn't seem right. Again, that's, you know, obviously a personal bias of mine, but is that something that would be something you'd be willing to look at as far as home education? And I know.
Absolutely. Look at that. Yeah. Yeah, you know, how much do you give them? Can you expense your entire income? Do you cap it somehow?
Well,
those are the details of
gotta,
it.
There's got to be a cap and guidelines and all that. I understand that.
But absolutely.
It just seems like there's just been a disparity in that regard with home educators versus
yeah.
private education and public school. One of the organizations I work for, Serve Our Youth Network. Are we running out of time?
No, we're good.
Okay.
Okay.
You got about five, 7 more minutes.
Okay. Okay. Last question. One of the organizations I work for is Serve Our Youth Network, and
mm-hmm.
we work with high-risk children and youth. And so I'm working with kids in juvenile detention centers, and we mentor children of incarcerated adults. And one thing I've learned is that those kids are basically the bulk of, down the road, the adult criminal justice system. About 70% of kids have a parent that's incarcerated end up in the juvenile or criminal justice system themselves. Iowa's got a growing prisoner population. That is a huge chunk of the state budget. Thoughts on
we all,
that could be addressed?
Yeah, look, we all know that the best medicine is preventive medicine. And making sure that our kids have the support network that they need is the best preventive medicine for a host of social issues, whether it's employment-related or criminal behavior issues. Or frankly, let's just go the step deeper and say it's unacceptable that a kid grows up without getting to have a childhood, without getting to have safety, without being able to be loved. The whole hierarchy of needs, let's put human care and a healed human heart at the top of it. And a kid that's been abused or grown up in that situation, we have to make sure they're being pointed in the right direction. The right direction is not the state government.
Sure.
The solution to hurting kids is in our families, in our churches, in our communities, and state government could do nothing better than to get out of the way whenever they can and make sure kids have access to a support network that works.
Find ways in which to even restorative justice within the community. Sometimes I think the knee-jerk solution is to incarcerate right away.
Yeah, it's just not. I've worked with Robert Talbot over at Quakerdale as part of their visioning process in some of the initiatives they're doing over at Quakerdale. It's a great model, and organizations, whether it's a Quakerdale or, you know, Four Oaks, or there's the ones across the state. This is the solution. It's from the private sector, and increasingly their ability to care for kids in a way that really does restore kids to a point of health and safety
mm-hmm.
is under attack by the regulations coming out of DHS.
Sure.
And whether it's being nickel and dimed from regulatory standpoint, saying you can't do this, got to do this, sometimes mm-hmm. laws that you can't possibly meet them both,
mm-hmm.
or inhibiting the funding stream or making the objectives, how many kids can you take care of instead of are you taking care of the kids well?
Sure.
These are things we need to solve at the state government level.
Okay. This kind of a dovetail on that just a little bit, and this will probably be my last one. IFI, Interchange Freedom Initiative, was a new correctional facility, and I don't know if you followed that at all. I was certainly interested in the, I think, Eighth Circuit Court opinion on whether they could stay at Newton. They said yes. Culver said, you know what, we're done. Would you invite IFI back, knowing that it obviously may not receive state funding, but their presence, I mean, they had like a 8% recidivism rate. I mean, that's phenomenal. You don't find that anywhere else. And if you were governor, would you say, hey, IFI, hey, Prison Fellowship, please come back?
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, the don't mess with success, I think, is the first do no harm would be the doctors. Any program that has success like that, you don't just not boot them out. Let's celebrate them. Let's highlight them and say we need more of this instead of losing it.
Even their own department, even Iowa's own Department of Management. I know this because my brother works for them and did the study on the different drug treatment programs, and he noticed the success, that IFI was seeing within, helping with drug treatment. And so it's just, it floored me.
And let's just step back. The problem with state government today is beholden to interest groups that get them elected. Politicians adopt the role of chief political leader as opposed to chief public servant of the state. And whether you're looking at an issue like should IFI, with their great success, continue to perform, or you're looking at how do I prioritize state budget, or am I willing to trust that people should keep their own hard-earned dollars and lower taxes? The problem with the government that we have today and the political system we have today is it enforces a pattern of misbehavior, the entrenchment of power, and the combination of money and business into that power stream. It is no wonder that Iowans are fed up with the way politics works. They should be. But what they shouldn't be is hopeless. Because we can turn it around. We have to have fresh leadership. I believe I'm that leadership to bring honest, hardworking, results-oriented government back to Des Moines.
Okay. Well, Christian, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you taking the time to answer these questions.
It's good to be here with you.